The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Good morning, friends, colleagues, and guests. It's my great pleasure to be the first to welcome you to Washington College of Law for what will surely be a historic and lively discussion about the recently drafted UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Nearly a year ago, I heard about the convention for the first time as Eric Rosenthal was interviewed on National Public Radio about the new drafting of the International Convention. At the time, I thought the Human Rights Brief, which is a publication of the Center for Human Rights and Humanitarian Law here at the law school, could sponsor a short panel event about the convention and the ratification of the convention. 9 months later, and a dozen or more meetings and planning sessions later, we have organize a panel that has morphed into a full day of events with nearly 140 attendees, international webcasts, and more than 20 prominent speakers from the disability, human rights, and international development fields. While this program is certain to be both informative and engaging, it is not without some difficulty. Despite months of planning and meetings with technology, facilities, and support services, we still have, and we've tried to anticipate a lot of accessibility concerns, we still have some concerns that things may be difficult to kind of maneuver around this facility. We have volunteers available all day that can help with things running smoothly. And please feel free to ask, myself or anyone else for questions or directions to anything in the building. We're also going to be experimenting with the WCL's webcasting capabilities today, so people will be able to participate from afar. I wanted to thank really quickly a number of individuals who have worked very hard to bring this day together. First, we wanted to thank Eric Rosenthal of Mental Disability Rights International, who has been really instrumental in bringing a lot of people here together. Corinne Munsterman of Information Technology here has also helped with creatively putting together the technology that we have. John Lancaster, Tepin Banerjee, and Arlene Cantor have all provided programmatic and financial support today. Hadar Harris and Amelia Parker of the Center for Human Rights and Humanitarian Law have devoted a lot of time to bringing this convention together. And finally, Amir Tehani, who is with the Office of Support sort of Special Events here, has really worked endlessly to coordinate this event and make sure that it can come to fruition. Finally, I'd like to give us... Okay, can you hear me?
Perhaps this should start.
Okay. Well, I'll try again to speak louder. Wait a second. Okay.
This is part of bearing with us.
Sorry.
How are you?
I'm Jack Flamberg.
Claudio Drosno. I'm the dean of the law school.
Oh, how nice to meet you. Thanks for hosting this.
Well, push that way by the mouth.
The Maybe he can read my mind.
We have to be careful whether there isn't a microphone.
Okay. All right. I guess we're ready to continue. Okay, I'm going to continue, and I'd like to introduce Dean Claudio Grossman, whose generous support has made this program possible today. Dean Grossman is a professor of law and Raymond Geraldson Scholar for International and Humanitarian Law here at American University Washington College of Law. He's the vice chair of the UN Committee Against Torture, a member of the Commission's Interpol Control of Interpol Files, and he also serves as the president of the Americas, of the College of the Americas, and as chair of the AALS Committee on International Cooperation. Dean Grossman was a member of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights and is the author of numerous publications regarding international law and human rights, and is also the recipient of numerous awards in those fields. Dean Grossman.
Well, thank you, Erin, and once again, good morning to all of you. On behalf of American University Washington College of Law, I would like to welcome all of you to this special conference on the new UN Disability Rights Convention, Building Support in the U.S. for Ratification and Implementation. This is a very timely topic, as the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and its optional protocol opened for signature less than 2 weeks ago on March 30, 2007. The convention seeks to remedy the historical shortcomings of the human rights system in safeguarding the rights of persons with disabilities, who represent roughly 10% of the world's population. And it's a very important step and development in the realization of the International Bill of Rights. This is a set of norms and procedures developed after the Second World War in recognition for the shortcomings of domestic systems to protect in certain situations the fundamental rights of individuals. It has developed also the human rights movement into a language of freedom, a language of individuals who want to develop themselves to the limit of their potential and realize the highest aspiration of humankind of freedom and democracy. Our school is a fitting place to have this important discussion, giving our school long-standing and demonstrating commitment to human rights and the rule of law and the rights of persons with disabilities. Our school engaged in a variety of initiatives to promote the rights, human rights in general. The school has a center for human rights, an academy of human rights. It has different programs to promote gender in the world. It's the site of the National Institute for Military Justice. It has a project of impact litigation, pursuing and selecting cases strategically for the purposes of promoting values of due process and democracy all over the world. In the field of the rights of people with disabilities, our school has developed a disability rights law clinic, which was established in the fall of 2005 under the leadership and dedication of Professor Robert Dierenstedt, who is here in the audience. And he's going to be a speaker later. The clinic gives supervised students the opportunity to represent clients in a variety of substantive areas and venues related to disability law and to people with mental and physical disability. The clinic handles cases involving a wide variety of issues, such as special education, the American with Disabilities Act, and matters involving the intersection between the criminal justice and mental disability. Conferences such as this one today and others, including last month's day-long conference on assisting law students with disability in the 21st century, RASTAX, which focuses on improving access to and success in law school for students with disabilities. Again, we anticipate in law school the type of world where we live. And as we're talking about huge endeavors such as the adoption of laws and the ratification of statutes, we need to anticipate and bring together those possibilities to our own students in the realm of the study of law. Our institution is committed to assisting students with disabilities to assure that they can get the most out of their law school experience. We have still a lot to learn, and we're not entering into the debate with the sense that we have accomplished everything. Quite to the contrary. We're here also to learn from the conference, to learn of possibilities to realize more fully and better our mission. I would like to briefly mention also that today's event is part of our school's annual founder celebration, which we host each spring in honor of two pioneering women, Ellen Spencer Massey and Emma Gillette, who founded our law school in 1896 with the conviction that legal education was key to achieving gender equality. At that time, women were not allowed into the study of the law and were not allowed into the practice of the profession. And our founding mothers believed that it was essential, exposures and learning and participation in the legal system to achieve gender equality. There is a powerful message in the way in which our founding mothers imagine and develop a law school and their belief in the value of the rule of law as an instrument of social engineering and as a possibility to channelize important aspirations of individuals and as a concrete way to achieve equality. Through our annual founder celebration, we offer approximately 60 engaging programs on a wide variety of cutting-edge and exciting topics related to business, human rights, intellectual property, international trade, gender, national security, and health, among others. There is hardly an issue in the society that lacks a legal component, and we have seen as part of our educational mission to provide a space where we can address the issues facing society so that the general public and academia could increase their knowledge and their exposures to issues facing the society, the nation, and in the world. Today's event is a result of collaboration of many organizations. In the past, law schools, universities stood in isolation. They will impart education, do research, put the result of their research in libraries and so forth and so on, and train people who got younger every year. It would be enough to say that technology has dramatically changed the way in which education research is imparted. And we see again as part of our educational mission to connect with the organizations that are also performing important societal goals. And this conference is also the result of that commitment. We look at strategic partnership with non-governmental organizations, with groups in the society, both nationally and internationally, that could assist the common educational mission that we all have in the framework of free universities. I would like then to recognize the main organizers of today's event. Let me start with our own students, the Human Rights Brief and its co-editors, Erin Schick and Mark Vorkin, as well as the Center for Human Rights and Humanitarian Law and its director. Many of the initiatives in this law school have been the result of student initiatives. Their enthusiasm and commitment bodes well for the practice of the profession. We see sometimes some cynical statements about individuals that are not committed with the values and important values of society. More than 60% of the law students coming to this law school are studying law because they believe that they can contribute to a better world through the study of the law. They are role models to all the members of our community. Now, we don't do an exit poll to see how many remain idealistic after being exposed to 3 years of law study, but I would like to say their example is crucial also for the teachers and the members of this community, showing that the educational process is not a one-way street, but we learn for each other created. I also want to thank Heather Harris, the dynamic director of our Center for Human Rights, who really has started in very important initiatives in the area of human rights to project further the impact of important values to a society. The brief, which is co-directed by Eric Schick and Mark working is as constantly provided quality legal analysis and cutting edge human rights issues, and is distributed to over 6,000 subscribers in more than 90 countries. So the impact of our students, in spite of the rigorous study environment, the pressure of debts, and so forth and so on, is unbelievable. And what they're doing is truly exemplary. I also would like to extend my gratitude to those who contributed in organizing today's conference, Mental Disabilities Rights International, and its executive director, Eric Rosenthal. Eric is an old friend of the law school. He was housed at that center here in the law school for a number of years until he felt that he could do even more outside the law school, and he certainly was right. And the impact of what he has done is unbelievable. We look forward to continue working with him. The Syracuse University College of Law, Disabilities and Policy Program of the Center on Human Policy, Law and Disability Studies, and the Syracuse Journal of International Law and Commerce, the U.S. International Council on Disability, and finally, our offices of special events and continual legal education, and our facilities department, which under the pressure of 60 conferences, sometimes running simultaneously, has shown also how professional they are. I also would like to thank our distinguished panelists, moderators, and speakers for sharing their extensive experience with us and for their contribution to this important dialogue. We're honored to have with us today not one, but two exceptional keynote speakers, the Governor of Pennsylvania, Dick Thornburgh, and the President of the Open Society Institute, Ariel Nair. It is now my pleasure to introduce our first speaker, John Lancaster, President of United States International Council on Disability and Executive Director of the National Council on Independent Living. Mr. Lancaster has had a distinguished career as a civil rights attorney, working on issues related to integration and empowerment of people with disability. He just recently returned from Hanoi, Vietnam, where he served as the Vice President of and Consultant with Vietnam's Enterprise Group, providing advice and technical assistance on law policy and programs concerning business, government relations, and people with disability. Mr. Lancaster has also served as the Executive Director of President's Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities under the Clinton Administration, and as the Director of the Office for Individuals with Disabilities under Governor Harry Hughes of Maryland. Without further delay, please join me in welcoming him to the podium. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean Grossman. Try again. Is that better? All right. Good morning. Thank you, Dean Grossman, and thank you for providing this fine facility on this cool but wonderful spring day. And we're appreciative of having a good location for this, and we want to thank yourself and American University's Washington College of Law for the hospitality and making us feel welcome and accommodated and included here at the Washington College of Law. So thank you. And I also want to take a minute to thank the people who have put this together. Eric Rosenthal and I and the other board members at the United States International Council on Disability decided quite some time ago, shortly after the General Assembly passed out the convention, that we really needed to do a conference on this here in Washington to start introducing this convention more thoroughly to the disability community in this country and to get much more active participation of the disability community in this convention, its implementation, its inclusion in international development issues, and hopefully for ultimate ratification by the United States. And Eric had some initial conversations with Aaron Scheich over here at the American University's Washington College of Law, and they were already planning something. So we asked if we couldn't just join forces, and we have done so. And I just want to say that Aaron Scheich and Lauren Mancini and some others here have really done some outstanding work in putting this thing together, and it's been a pleasure to be affiliated and to work with them on it. I also got to say that my good friend and vice president of USID and the head of MDRI, Eric Rosenthal, has done just an outstanding job on pulling this day together, particularly in pulling together many of the panelists and making sure that they are going to participate and to be here. So I can't thank Eric enough for what he's done in terms of this day and the great support that we've gotten from Arlene Cantor, who was involved in very early conversations about this as well, and who has supported the effort both financially and with thought and other efforts. So we really appreciate the contribution of Syracuse University's College of Law, and in particular their disability law and policy program that they have up there at Syracuse University. And we also want to thank the World Institute on Disability, the American Association of People with Disabilities, and particularly the National Organization on Disability for their support as well. So we've put together, I think, a good comprehensive day, and I look forward to it. And it is an exciting day because we're here to work together and to talk and discuss and to strategize about what I think, without a doubt, is the most remarkable, most significant law and policy development related to people with disabilities that the world has seen to date. This thing is big, potentially. And I say potentially. It could just be words on a nice piece of paper and not much more if we don't get involved. And when I say we, people who care about this issue, and in particular people with disabilities themselves. The difference that this treaty can make, especially in developing nations where people with disabilities are very often forgotten, out of sight, out of mind, most impoverished at all, the difference that this convention can ultimately make is huge. As Dean Grossman mentioned, I had the honor and the privilege to have worked overseas in a developing nation for 4 years in Vietnam from the years 2000 through 2004. And I'd spent 5 years before that traveling back and forth working on a joint project with the old President's Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities in the Clinton administration, USAID, and the Vietnamese government. And we were able to do some fairly significant things there in terms of starting a disability movement in Vietnam that really has some potential and is growing and is now vibrant, to make some pretty important law and policy changes in that country that are starting to move the agenda for inclusion and empowerment and economic inclusion of people with disabilities forward in a rather significant way. And that didn't happen because of USAID or any involvement I and a few others might have had over there. That happened for two reasons, in my opinion. One, because people with disabilities there in Vietnam themselves were starting to become empowered and with their own chutzpah, so to speak, were approaching their government, both at the local and national level, to start and make things happen. The other thing that spurred things along was the first decade of disabled persons for the Asia-Pacific region, which was spearheaded by UNSCAP, the UN Economic and Social Commission for the Asia-Pacific region. And the goals and the objectives that they established under that first decade, they're now have gone into a second decade, gave impetus to the nations in that region to start addressing these issues and to do something. If they wanted to look like good national citizens, if you will, state citizens on the world stage, and particularly the regional stage. This spurred Vietnam, when combined with the own activism that they had coming from their own people, to start addressing this issue. If it hadn't been for those two things coming together, it probably would not have happened yet over there. So the importance of something like this new convention is huge. It cannot be minimized. It has to be supported and has to be thoroughly and effectively implemented. For the U.S., we're not signing on to this thing right now. And one has to ask why. What possibly do we have to lose by signing this convention? I say absolutely nothing. There are some people say, well, it doesn't really establish standards. You know, it's kind of general. There's no real enforcement mechanisms. Well, that's the case. It ought to be a piece of cake for us to sign on. We've already got standards. We already have the ADA and many other fine civil rights laws related to people with disabilities. What possibly can we lose other than face and reputation by failing to sign it? So I ask, why are we passing up this opportunity where our country could truly benefit? This is an area where, out of our experience in starting down this journey and having somewhat of an effective system of law and policy set in place in the start of true inclusion and economic empowerment of people with disabilities and equal opportunity, I say that there's a lot for us to be gaining by signing this. Number one, it gives you an area where we can exert positive and productive and peaceful leadership in the world for once. Something besides a power grab for oil or more iPods and tennis shoes for people who probably can't afford them anyways, or forcing our democracy down somebody's throat. Why not offer them an example of what democracy can do when extended to everybody? So I say, for number one, there's one area where we could truly benefit. A second area where we could truly benefit would be here at home. Hopefully by signing it, it would spur us to do a little monitoring of ourselves, a little self-assessment, to look, okay, we've had this ADA since 1990, where are we? Has the employment rate of people with disabilities here in this country improved? If not, why not? What do we need to do? So a monitoring, assessment. Maybe we'd actually, government here would actually get the idea, well, maybe we could set some goals and objectives around, say, employment of people with disabilities. And to see if we couldn't start making a real difference. So I'd say there's things that we could get from this convention that might spur us into doing a better job right here in our own country vis-a-vis people with disabilities. I, for one, as an American who served his country in Vietnam during that war, was really embarrassed when I had the privilege and the honor to be able to sit on the floor of the General Assembly Hall on March 30th and watch 80 nations come up and sign this convention and to get it kicked off, and also the European community. And even countries that weren't signing it, like Vietnam, when I was sad they didn't, and Japan and some others who did not sign that day, at least they had the honor and the respect of the other nations of the world, of UN processes, and of people with disabilities themselves, to at least have had a delegate from their mission sitting there on the hall that day. The United States desk sat empty, thumbing our noses, if you will, in some sort of insolent arrogance at the rest of the world. So I look forward to this day when we can start addressing some of these issues, come up with plans for implementation and how we can support those 80 nations and the ones that will follow that have signed on and who are ratifying this important convention, how we can support them in implementation, share with them what we've learned through implementing our own ADA. I look forward to discussing today how we can infuse the principles that are contained in this convention into the whole international development process worldwide, the activities that are funded through structures like the World Bank and the development agencies of many countries like our USAID and Japan's JICA and the Danish DANIDA and the others that fund international development efforts. So I look forward to discussing how we can infuse these principles into those. And I look forward to seeing what strategies we can come up with to seeking ratification by the United States to this important convention. So again, I, as one of the organizers of this day, want to thank the people who really did the yeoman's work here, and that's Eric Rosenthal and Aaron Scheich and the people here at the Washington College of Law. This is going to be a good day. We thank you all for attending. And now, with great pleasure, I get to introduce a good friend of mine and a leader in our movement here in the United States, someone who has served our country both effectively in government, in the Environmental Protection Agency, and in other arenas, and also in the private sector. He currently serves as the president and CEO of the National Organization on Disability. He's been personally a tremendous support to myself and to the National Council on Independent Living, and also our efforts with USID. They are indeed USID members, and I want to introduce to you Mike DeLand. Mike?
John, thank you for that all too generous introduction, when my only role today is to make another introduction. I would like to join in thanking our hosts here at American University, the dean, and all of those who have worked so hard on this conference. When I think of my law school days of many years ago, that we tended to be much more inwardly focused, and did not, to my knowledge, put on conferences anywhere of this magnitude. So you will all be commended, as is John Lancaster and Eric Rosenthal, Tara Mellish, and others who have spent so much time in organizing what clearly is going to be a productive day. My role today is the distinct privilege of introducing one of America's finest public servants, one who is also America's foremost advocate for those of us with disabilities. He is the father of a man, young man with an intellectual disability, former governor of Pennsylvania, former attorney general of the United States, founding director of the National Organization on Disability, vice chairman of our international arm, the World Committee on Disability. In circles such as this, he is also known as the husband of one Ginny Thornburg, who I saw with us today, a tireless advocate on behalf of all. He also is a sports aficionado, and any of his beloved Pennsylvania teams that are playing on any given day command his attention. All of these characteristics are embodied in our keynote speaker today, Governor, and I tend to refer to him as Governor General, thinking of his other title, Dick Thornburg. When it came to the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, then Attorney General Thornburg was at the forefront. And I might just quickly add passage of that watershed civil rights legislation. It was truly a bipartisan effort. And those of us who have to deal with the rancor on the Hill, Capitol Hill today, need only to think back to that era and strive to recapture it again when you had Dick Thornburg working side by side with Senator Harkin, Boyden Gray, former President Bush's general counsel, very much in the mix in that day to day, as was the then Vice President George Bush and ultimately President George Bush, who signed with great pride the Americans with Disabilities Act into law in July, that wonderful, glorious day in the South Lawn of the White House in 1990. So we have to commend our speaker today for his efforts in that legislation, which positioned America as the leader in civil rights and for people with disabilities. And it is ironic, as John has said, that our country is not now taking the lead on the UN convention. But we have in our speaker today a tireless advocate to persuade, cajole our government to do the right thing. And I might also add that we have in the back of the room Mary Dolan, who is our vice president, my trusted advisor, director of the World Committee on Disability, who has worked behind the scenes, out front, on this issue for some time. And I also would be remiss in just not acknowledging Yosef Dart, who is here today, who is carrying on the work of her late husband, who we all know, Justin, who was the leader of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Yosika is now in the forefront of this issue. So without further ado, that it's a real privilege, pleasure of mine to introduce the leader who is in the forefront of this challenge we now have, and I'm I'm delighted to say, close friend, Governor General Dick Thornburgh.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning to you all. It is a distinct pleasure for me to join at this important and indeed historic occasion. The adoption of the UN Convention on Rights of Persons with Disabilities is a great accomplishment for the international community and a great source of hope for people with disabilities everywhere. It's been my privilege to be involved with the disability movement for many years and to work for the inclusion of people with disabilities in all aspects of public life. I'm also, as Mike mentioned, the father of a man with intellectual disability, my son Peter, who's in the audience today, coming to check up on his dad. Work is really a family affair, as my wife Ginny has served for many years as vice president of the National Organization on Disability and is the founder and director of the NOD program on religion and disability. I've long been proud of our country's leadership in creating opportunities for people with disabilities as full members of our society with rights equal to all. I am here to state my unequivocal support for the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. The United Nations has taken an important and long overdue step toward bringing the over 650 million people with disabilities in the world into the mainstream of the human rights system. I applaud the disability community for its tireless efforts in what must have seemed an uphill battle for international recognition of this important issue. The convention represents important principles that all Americans hold dear. Basic recognition and equal protection of every person under the law, non-discrimination, the fundamental importance of independent living, and the right to make basic choices about our lives. We pioneered these basic principles under American law. We in the United States have demonstrated that people with disabilities can participate fully in our democracy. We have demonstrated that society as a whole is richer and better off when people with disabilities are included fully in every aspect of our life. Protection of disability rights is fundamentally American. The United States should live up to its leadership role in recognizing these basic principles by signing and ratifying this convention. During the time that I was Attorney General and the point person for President George H.W. Bush's administration on the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, I acknowledged that no piece of legislation could alone change the longstanding misperceptions that many people have about disability. Misperceptions based largely on stereotype, ignorance, and fear of what is different. Any reshaping of attitudes would be the gradual result, not of the words or ideas in the law, but of bringing people with disabilities from the margins of society into the mainstream of American life, in our schools and workplaces, on buses and trains, and in our courthouse, restaurants, theaters, and congregations, where they not only have an absolute right to be, but where we have an obligation as fellow human beings to welcome them as equals. The effort to secure passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act was difficult. Those of us who wanted to see it happen were given countless reasons why it couldn't be done. We were told that the climate in Congress wasn't right, would be too expensive, too complicated, ineffective, impossible to enforce, even that the country in general just wasn't ready for it. So we discussed, debated, argued, researched, analyzed, negotiated, and finally passed the most progressive disability legislation the world has ever seen. This legislation, with innovative concepts such as reasonable accommodation, has changed America. It has truly made us more representative, more democratic, and more free by ending the unchecked exclusion
of 54 million Americans with disabilities from our daily lives. That's not to say we don't have a long way to go. The ADA isn't perfect, and people with disabilities in America today continue to face serious challenges. Still, we've made remarkable progress that is not only celebrated here at home, but also recognized abroad. Because of our adoption of the ADA and other disabilities rights legislation, the United States is viewed internationally as the pioneer for disability rights. Disability activists from other countries have taken the ADA to their governments and said, look, this is how it should be done. We need to do this here in our country. And governments around the world have responded. As one who worked hard to gain protection of these rights in the United States, I'm very proud to see how these basic principles have now been established as a part of international law through the adoption of the UN Disability Rights Convention. As we overcame so many barriers to the enactment of the ADA, I am confident that we can establish an even greater coalition to bring about support for the UN Disability Rights Convention. I have great admiration for the many government representatives and disability activists who worked long hours at the UN to draft this excellent convention. I know many of you here have organized this conference, were intimately involved in the drafting process. Today's conference is a valuable opportunity to learn from many of those involved in the developing of the convention and to examine the challenges of implementation. As we work together to gain support for the convention, we must recognize that the challenges we face are intimately linked with the very circumstances of economic, social, and political marginalization that affects people with disabilities in the United States and around the world. Despite our progress at home and the progress that has inspired in other countries, disability as a global issue remains near the bottom of the list as far as priorities for many governments and societies go. People with disabilities are among the poorest, least educated, and most abused and excluded people on earth. We also have to keep in mind that the convention can be a strong tool as well as an inspiration for civil society around the world. NGOs and advocates will have a new legal framework within which to push for reforms based on legal obligations. One example is the World Committee on Disability, henceforth will use the convention as a basis for its annual FDR International Disability Award. The winning nation will be selected based on its adoption and implementation of the UN Convention. Before I close, let me address the painful, and I must admit somewhat puzzling question of the seeming reluctance of our own government to assume a lead role in this international effort. Let's look at some of the questions and concerns that have been raised about this convention. To begin with, it has been argued that disability rights are more appropriately addressed as a domestic concern, given the complexity of the issues involved. In other words, this isn't really an appropriate subject for international protection. Certainly, good domestic legislation in every country would be an ideal solution. But since most countries don't already have such protection, it does not seem reasonable to expect that this will change dramatically without international pressure. The fact is, for many countries, international conventions have already served as a catalyst for the development of important domestic protection in many other areas. As a practical matter, the United States will have much more authority to speak out about these and other forms of discrimination against people with disabilities worldwide if we agree to abide by some international scrutiny at home. We already have laws in place that are consistent with the UN Disability Rights Convention. But it is correctly noted that in ratifying the convention, the United States agrees to report regularly to an international oversight body. We have nothing to hide. We can only gain from participating in the process of international review. Moreover, we should not be so proud as to think that we cannot learn from other countries about how to meet the challenge of providing even better opportunities in this country for people with disabilities. Some looked at the final text of the convention and found it lacking in strict enforceable provisions. Some say it lacks the kind of detail that we fought so hard to include in the ADA. and that we have found so essential for the enforcement of basic rights in the United States. We must keep in mind that a human rights convention is a legal instrument that must apply consistently around the world, in countries rich and poor, in countries with widely varying legal systems, in many countries where the idea of full participation for people with disabilities may be radically new and untested. The flexibility of this convention is its strength, not its weakness. It lays down the core values and principles that are essential to ending discrimination against people with disabilities in any society. It provides governments with guidance and direction now lacking under general provisions of international law. Article 9, for example, requires governments to, quote, take appropriate measures to ensure to persons with disabilities access on an equal basis with others to the physical environment, to transportation, to information and communications, and to other facilities and services open or provided to the public both in urban and rural areas. That's about as broad as it can get, folks. Article 24 recognizes the rights of persons with disabilities to education and requires governments to provide an inclusive education system at all levels, enabling persons with disability to participate effectively in a free society. This convention provides governments with core minimum standards needed to make essential reforms without locking different countries into one particular approach or another. The convention creates a committee on the rights of persons with disabilities that will review reports of governments and will issue general recommendations about how to bring about full compliance with the convention. Through this process of interpretation, governments at every level of economic and social development can receive guidance about steps they can take to bring about enforcement of the convention. Finally, some have said that because of America's comprehensive domestic protections, a treaty on disability would have no relevance in our own country. We are indeed the most progressive country in the world when it comes to the domestic protection of disability rights. The universality of rights and fundamental freedoms, as expressed in our Declaration of Independence, is the foundation on which our entire society is based. Respect for human rights is also a stated principle of our foreign policy, precisely because we recognize that stability, security, and economic opportunity in any society presupposes a social order based on respect for the rights of its citizens. Given this history and these values, it would seem natural for the United States to assume a leading role, not even a passive one, in the effort to recognize and enforce an international treaty of this kind. Ratification of the Disability Rights Convention is an opportunity to export to the world the very best we have to offer. This is a chance to use our rich national experience in disability rights, which has gained us the respect of the world community, to extend the principles embodied in the ADA to hundreds of millions of people with disabilities worldwide who today have no domestic protection. This is worthy of our leadership. We have everything to gain and nothing to lose by playing the role that the world expects of us. Just like the ADA, this convention will not provide an instant legal solution which can affect immediate changes in attitudes and cultural perceptions, nor will it dispel the ignorance that leads to discrimination and human rights abuses of people with disabilities. What it will do is create a permanent place for disability within the human rights framework. It will put disability on the radar screen of governments and societies as a legitimate human rights issue to which they must pay heed. It will provide guidance and standards and create legal obligations for governments to respect the rights of this sizable population. It can serve as a powerful advocacy tool for the global disability movement to promote the inclusion and equality of opportunity for all. While we celebrate the achievement of the convention, let us also keep our eye on the enormous challenges that lie ahead. We who are gathered here today are faced with this very important task. It is up to all of us to make sure that every American learns about this convention. It's my hope that the organized community of people with disabilities will once again lead the charge to gain support for adoption and ratification of this convention in the United States. We are to gain support from our government leaders, the administration and members of Congress. They must hear from you. They must know how dearly you value this convention, how much it has the potential to improve America's standing in the world community, and how essential it is to us to maintain U.S. leadership in the international disability movement. No national movement happens without careful planning. It is your charge here today to make sure that you do not leave without concrete plans for gaining support for this convention. Change will be gradual, perhaps painfully slow, but this is the best first step we can take toward promoting change on a global scale. Our commitment to leadership on disability rights should not end at the water's edge. This convention can help to focus world attention on the more than 650 million people worldwide whose rights have been ignored for much too long. Let's be about the business of placing the United States once again proudly in the forefront of efforts to see that those rights are honored and implemented now and forevermore. Thank you very much for letting me participate.
Thank you for those very, very inspiring words, Governor Thornburgh. That was bring it all home, and most important, the challenge of this conference to us to come forward with concrete steps, I think, is the most important thing we can do today. I hope your stamina is long, because at the very end of this conference, the last session is dedicated to an open discussion of strategy, what we are going to do. We're already running short on time, so without a break, I would ask the panelists from the next workshop to come to the fore, and let's get the discussion going on the history and background and substance of the convention, and let's proceed from there. We'll just run the conference a little late, but I think this has been a very important discussion. Thank you.